We start out today, as we do on every Friday show, and one of the things that's a little different today is that it's about 9,000 degrees outside, and so I'm happy that neither of my guests are in full business attire today. John Palguda, Vice President of the Partnership for Public Service, you came sans tie. I've never seen you without a tie before.
First time
today
here
is the first time I've seen you without a tie, and I am glad that you took advantage of being here, and I hope you're telecommuting for the rest of the day after the show.
I'm actually back in the office.
Wow,
after this.
You are dedicated. You are dedicated. Well, I appreciate you being here. You've chosen great stories as always, and we're looking forward to digging into those on the Federal News Countdown. And my other panelist this week is Amtower. You need no other introduction. You're just Amtower.
Why? Thank you.
Host of Amtower Off Center on Mondays at what, noon?
Noon
is when it runs now.
12:05.
And several other times throughout the week. And plug your website and all your other stuff. Go right ahead.
Me plug my website,
yeah.
federaldirect.net. I also want to give a quick plug to, we finally have our Government Market Master program up and running at George Mason University. And the web link will be at my site. And I'll shoot it to Francis so he can put it at his as well.
Yes. All right, terrific. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
I've participated in that program, and it is...
hopefully you'll be back.
I hope so. I've got to be invited first.
Well,
so.
There you go.
Okay, so, but I'll be glad to do it.
Consider it done.
We start, of course, as we do every week on the Federal News Countdown with...
Number 3!
And the third most important federal news story as selected by John Palguda is our Via Jerem's story from federalnewsradio.com. What happens August 3rd? That's, I guess, we can't call it shutdown day. Exactly, I guess.
Not yet.
Should we call it debt limit day, or what do you think we should call it, John?
I think we call it who the heck knows what's going to happen day, but it's very real. I mean, the reason this is such an interesting story, of course, and you guys have been doing a ton of coverage on this whole debt ceiling and the impact of it, but in the history of the Republic, we have never run into a situation where, one, we've run out of money, and two, we've locked up the national credit card, and the government's in the position of not being able to pay all the bills. And since we've never gone down this road before, you know, nobody knows exactly what's going to happen, but we know nothing good is going to happen.
Right. Big meeting on the Hill yesterday where folks from Standard & Poor's, the credit rating organization, were trying to explain to members of the House of Representatives what it means. And I don't come away with much confidence that what they had to say made much of a difference in the positions of a lot of members of the House, which is where this seems to be, this back and forth debate seems to be focused right now, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And it's interesting. I think even among some of our elected representatives, I'm not sure that they fully understand or appreciate the implications of what could happen. I've heard, and you guys have too, this notion of, well, you know, we always get by somehow,
mm-hmm.
And money's still going to be coming in.
Right.
So kind of what's the big deal?
It's like the deal with the FAA, which you and I talked about before we went on the air. Well, there always seems to be some kind of solution, so it'll all just work out.
Yeah.
And I think we might be toward the end of our things will all work out scenarios.
Yeah. I mean, I was in government during the last shutdown because of lapse of appropriations, and there was the same language there. And it was not as severe as what we're facing here.
Mm-hmm.
And the notion was, well, nobody's even going to notice. But surprise, you know, people did notice when they couldn't get a passport and when the forests were not open, the parks and so on. This is a major story this week.
John Palguda's story number 3 from federalnewsradio.com. What happens August 3rd is linked up on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Amtower, your story number 3 this week is not curious, shall we say. DOD identifies Marine casualty, and I went ahead and linked up the release from the Department of Defense, but you and I chatted a little bit before we went on the air. This is not about the particular member of the military who's listed in this casualty notice.
This is not about the Lance Corporal from the Marines. This is about things that I get via email, requested emails, several times a week. Way too often, but I really think it's important for people to keep in mind the impact that both of the conflicts have on families around the country. We're losing a lot of young men and women, and not so young men and women. And, you know, a lot of the reports that I see are people who are from the National Guard, and we're talking 40 and 50 year old male and female, who we know they're leaving families mm-hmm. behind, and there's just a tremendous loss here. And I don't think people realize the number of people dying. I really wanted just to say, you know, lest we forget, there's a real cost to everything here, and it's a cost that most of us don't bear, but those families have to absorb.
The particular one that you selected, and as I mentioned when we chatted about this, you said it's not this particular one, it's right. just that it was the last one that you got.
Right.
The Department of Defense announcing the death of a Marine who was supporting Operation Enduring Freedom, died July 15th of wounds suffered July 6th while conducting combat operations in Helmand Province in Afghanistan.
19-year-old kid.
19-year-old Marine. Was assigned to the base 29 Palms in California. Just doing his duty, and we there's a million things that we could say, and they would all sound rather patronizing in the
paying
context
the ultimate
price,
of
this guy.
I say a prayer for every one of them.
Story number three from AmTower is about our military, and you can see that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Coming up on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, more of the Federal News Countdown with AmTower and John Palguda. Story number two when the countdown continues.
Goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of the Treasury says it plans to move to an all-electronic system for invoicing. Treasury will implement the Internet payment platform by the end of next fiscal year. Then starting in 2013, all of Treasury's vendors will have to use the electronic system in order to submit their invoices. The department says the move will save it around $7 million per year and improve the time it takes to process those invoices and pay the vendors by as much as 50%.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology. Information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Do you know us? We employ more than 70,000 people in more than 800 locations throughout the United States. Through our network of suppliers, we indirectly enable tens of thousands of American jobs. Tens of thousands. Jobs that put food on the table. Jobs that put kids through college. Jobs that keep our economy going. And yet, many of you don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. We may be the biggest unknown company in America, but our jobs power the economy, and our technologies, products, and services power the world. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. We'll talk with one of the nation's top medical sleuths. He finds diagnoses to mysterious diseases no one else can. And he's in line for a Service to America medal. Plus, we'll get an update on NASA flight crews as the agency regroups for the next round of exploration. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown with John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service and Mark Amtower of Amtower Off Center and various other enterprises. And we're up two on the countdown.
Number two!
Amtower, your second most important federal news story of the week is Jason Miller's story, which is headlined Acquisition Workforce Showing Signs of Change. And I know this is something that John and I have talked about, at least off the air before. What are you seeing that maybe Dan Gordon is seeing or not seeing? He's the subject of this story, but what are you seeing in the acquisition workforce?
Well, the acquisition workforce is, as hopefully we all know, the 1102s are grossly overworked, understaffed, showing signs of change. What does that mean? There's a pulse now. They reference a group of young acquisition professionals. Number one, I'm thankful there is a group of young acquisition professionals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ecstatic that they're getting together as a network, formal or otherwise. But there's just a number of things here. OMB came out a short time ago saying they wanted fixed price contracts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are onerous for the contractors, the contracting officers in government. They just consume massive amounts of time and they always need to be reworked.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just, it's one of those cans of worms. And Jason and I are going to do a show in a week or two on all things acquisition where I'll just, you know, throw out the red meat and let them go.
Jason references, John, in this story, Dan Gordon's citation of new leadership at the Defense Acquisition University and the Federal Acquisition Institute, as well as the Acquisition Academy at VA. That's great. There's no possible way that as many people as are needed can go through that training. So ramping up the number of people, I mean, experience is really the only way to do it, isn't it?
That's absolutely true. I mean, this is a good start. I mean, you know, so...
I guess anything helps is probably what your perspective is.
That's right, but is it enough for the issue? And no, you're right, it's... You know, you build a great acquisition workforce over time with a lot of experience and investing in your talent and developing the career paths and all that. And, you know, we're paying the price for not having done that. We're trying to catch up. But it's one of those ironic things where, you know, all of the debate, you know, now is about the deficit and government spending and everything. And what we continue to seem to overlook or forget is that you have to invest in your workforce if you want more efficiency and effectiveness. To simply slash training, slash people, or to do kind of a remedial. Okay, oh, now we're going to really push some folks through. You're shooting yourself in the foot. It's like downsizing the IRS when you're trying to raise revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Every IRS person, every revenue agent, brings in much more than their individual salary. Yet you still have these proposals for across-the-board cuts. Same thing with the acquisition workforce. You know, a good acquisition person is, you know, worth many times their salary in terms of savings to the government through better contracting.
Exactly.
Well, you used the term that sets me off, and that's across-the-board cuts. And the idea, the conversation is still nowhere on the radar screen in Washington. We've talked about right-sizing the workforce and right-sizing the budget. Nobody's ever talked about right-sizing the work, which is, okay, if this agency has to be X percent smaller, then what X percent of the mission or the work do we not want to do? That, I think, is a legitimate discussion. It's maybe a political discussion, but then that to me seems to be the kind of discussion that politics is for, is deciding what are the policy priorities of the United States.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's the tough conversation to have because you're talking about, okay, we're going to stop doing something or we're going to cut back something. And that's the honest conversation. And if you really want to save resources, but it's tough politically. So the easy answer is, well, let's starve the beast. You know, let's do across the board cuts, or everybody can, you know, live with a belt tightening. And the fact of the matter is, no, you can't.
Mm-hmm. What would you like to see AmTower as the ultimate result of changes in the acquisition workforce?
I'd like to see something come back that was in government, OPM policy, when I started monitoring government activity in the early 80s, and that's 1 week mandatory training regardless of discipline for all federal employees. Way back when.
Smiling as he says that, John. You like that idea, don't you?
You remember that, though, but you know, somewhere along the line, it's gone away. That's stupid. You got to train people to keep them up to date. You got to train people to keep them happy in their job.
I was just going to say, that's an engagement tool too, isn't it, John?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of discretionary energy that people can bring to the workplace. And I was talking to a group of federal managers at Homeland Security yesterday, and a very experienced group of folks. We were talking about employee engagement. And I said, you know, think back on a time when you were in a work environment where folks really were into the work. I mean, they were being supported. They knew they had an important mission. And it was a, you know, lovely sight to behold. You see all the heads shaking up and down affirmatively, because when you get it right, when you get the workforce component right, beautiful things happen in terms of what you can get done.
Yeah, and Dan says in here, the morale component is a very important one. For him to have to say that out loud shows me that it's been lacking in way too many places.
Mm-hmm. What drives that morale? Top three things, John.
Leadership, obviously, and leadership encompasses a bunch of things. What, you know, what do you think of your top leaders, your first line supervisor? You know, people leave the supervisor more often than they leave the job. Then the second thing is, you know, making sure folks are well matched, to the mission so that everybody comes in to do something good. They want to have good use made of their skills and abilities. Mm-hmm. So the ability of an organization to do that and to show people the line of sight. What you're doing here has a ultimate effect down the road, and you should really, you know, feel good about that line of sight to the mission. And then the third factor changes. Right now, it's actually quite interesting from our best places to work analyses. In 2010, at least, pay emerged, and not more money necessarily. It was just that, you know, as people see their pay being attacked, perhaps. I think they start, you know, seeing that as a reflection on their value as a person.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, you know, I want more money and I'll be happier. It was, I want to be appreciated and recognized, and I want to have the ability to, you know, have a decent life while I do a good job.
Why were you surprised that emerged where it hadn't shown up before?
Yeah, a little bit. And I think it emerged because of our current economic times. Mm-hmm. So it was understandable in reflection, but I would not have predicted that it would have come up as one of the major drivers of job satisfaction.
AmTower story number two on the Federal News Countdown is headlined Acquisition Workforce Showing Signs of Change. It's Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com. It's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And John Palguta's story number two is next on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. Getting older doesn't make someone a bad driver. Dr. Jonathan King at NIH explains that the data show that the total number of accidents and fatalities in older drivers is actually much smaller than in teenagers and people in their older 20s.
What we do see is because older drivers drive a lot less, the per mile data or the per trip data, you start to see an increase in accidents and, unfortunately, in fatalities as well. That becomes most obvious for drivers who are over the age of 80 or so.
For more on age-related health topics and tips for older drivers, visit www.nia.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language? With no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills. You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know, that this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-600-6612, and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills, and the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-600-6612. That's 1-800-600-6612.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Statistics have always been important in baseball, but the Nats and other teams are now using sophisticated engineering to analyze the game even more. A technology called PitchFX, for example, uses multiple video cameras to follow the physics of the ball from the pitcher's hand through the crack of the bat. It's great for baseball enthusiast Alan Nathan, also a University of Illinois physics professor.
These cameras are recording every pitch in every game in Major League Baseball in 1/60th of a second intervals from when the ball is released to when it crosses home plate.
The system is engineered to instantly provide television viewers with graphics on pitch location and speed, and Nathan says coaches can get details about the physical mechanics of player performance.
You end up with a distinct advantage for player development purposes, for scouting purposes.
Complementary systems are zeroing in on batters and even following motions on the entire field. More at nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Young, gov, and awesome? Join 500 federal emerging leaders at the only conference created by and for younger feds. The next generation of government summit presented by young government leaders and GovLoop takes place July 28th and 29th at the JW Marriott. Federal News Radio listeners, save on registration. Use the discount code FEDRADIO to save $55. Visit nextgengovt.com.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. Every week in the 3 o'clock hour on Friday, two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the three news stories they think are most important to people who work for the federal government. Rank them in order from number 3 to number 1 and count them down with me on the Federal News Countdown. This week, the experts are Mark Amtower, the guru of federal government marketing, and John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service. And John, your story number 2 is the eye roller of the week, I guess, if I had such an award. The USA Today story, some federal workers more likely to die than lose jobs. Now, other than the two most important factors of this story, which are it's got a cute headline and you're quoted in it, what about this struck you?
Couple things, Francis. First of all, it's in USA Today, one of the most widely read publications out there, and it was on their front page. The lead in to the page A3 story. So a lot of folks, a lot of eyeballs have looked at this. Mm-hmm. And if they are not, if they don't have the bigger picture, the takeaway is, we not only are our federal employees overpaid, but you can't fire them and all that. And that is, this is a perfect example of where the actual data shown is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
The story, the takeaway is inaccurate. So here's the deal. There's literally hundreds of thousands of people who leave government every year.
Mm-hmm.
Last fiscal year, for example, over 50,000 retired. So we discount those. There were 154,000 who left through other than retirement. 64,000 they were in temporary appointments or their jobs went away. 74,000 quit. They just said, I got other opportunities. Or some of them, I think, left because they saw the handwriting on the wall. 365 rift. And then 11,668 employees last fiscal year were dismissed for poor performance or misconduct on the job. So 11,000, but that's, half of 1% of the 2.1 million civilian employees. There were also, 3,215 employees who died, on the job, not at the workplace, but they died. They were active federal employees. Mm-hmm. And if you break it down by agencies, as the reporter does, there are some agencies where more people died than were fired for cause.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is a couple things about this data. First of all, as I said, a lot of people leave government. A small percent are actively fired, but I've spent a lot of time in government, as you know, and Congress did not want federal employees to be fired at will. It was not employment at will. They thought the public interest is better served to make sure if you're going to fire somebody, it's for cause, mm-hmm. not because they happen to work for the last administration.
Right.
And the Congress created due process. So for a manager to remove a federal employee, they have to demonstrate that there's cause. They didn't show up for work on these many days or their performance is unsatisfactory. The employee can take that and appeal that decision. They can go to EOC, maybe MS, if there's a discrimination issue. Mm-hmm. They can go to the Merit System Protection Board if it's, his judgment or her judgment is wrong. So managers said, but that's a bit of a hassle. So a lot of managers have that tough conversation with employees. It's not working out here. This fit isn't good. And you can't stay here. And I think oftentimes the employees say, okay, I'm out of here.
Right.
You don't have to fire me. Give me a couple weeks or something, but I'm going to be gone. I don't think that it's that different in the private sector, in large corporations. Maybe a little mom and pop or fast food establishment. But I think in the private sector, managers are reluctant to go through the hassle, and they try to ease people out. So I think probably there are more people fired, but it's not a great number. The research shows inside of government, well over 96% of employees are doing a perfectly satisfactory or better job. So we're talking about a very small percent of the workforce. And yes, let me put this on the table. We still in government have to do a better job than we do in dealing with performance issues. Mm-hmm. And that's been going on for decades through various administrations. But this notion that you cannot deal with a poorly performing federal employee is just inaccurate.
My first thought about this story, MTower, is here's USA Today again with another story.
And it's USA Today, not Today.
Well,
they just have the letters misplaced here.
here's another USA Today story dumping on federal employees,
yep,
for a reason that I don't know. What do you think?
I think they're turning themselves into a tabloid. They've never been an in-depth paper to begin with. The concept of USA Today was, news in four paragraphs. Well, you can't do a real story in four paragraphs, so why not turn in, what is it? The News of the World is Dead. Long live USA Today.
I continue to be surprised at the headline. I guess I shouldn't be, but I mean, you could change that to anything, and you could do anything with that. Some radio hosts more likely to get laryngitis than lose jobs, or by putting the word "some" at the front of it, you can turn anything into anything.
Yeah, and it was a cute headline. I'm sure it's got a lot of attention paid to it.
He got Drudge to pick it up.
And probably 500 other radio hosts for different reasons than ours.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Well, actually, I did a Sacramento yesterday, a radio host from the station where Rush Limbaugh started his career, I was uh-huh. told. They called to do an online interview about this story.
And what was the angle of the interview? Did you detect an agenda either before or during the interview?
Well, I have to say, this particular commentator, it was not Rush, but this particular commentator, I think was pretty balanced. He said, you know, okay, so I'm seeing the numbers. What should I take away? Is this the full story?
Mm-hmm.
And we actually had a nice conversation. So once you start getting behind the numbers and you start talking about what's really going on and how does the rest of the world work, you know, people start understanding, okay, well, yeah, it's not bad. You know, there may be things that can be improved. We talked about, could something be changed to make it better for or easier for managers to manage in government? The answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that. But yeah, if you can have the conversation and get beyond the headline and beyond the two statistics and look at the bigger picture, you can have a better dialogue.
I would wager that a lot of papers like USA Today also do behind-the-scenes polls to see what people want to read and then take stories and angle it to that.
I'm not sure I agree with that. I don't think that happens. I hope that doesn't happen. I'll just put it that way.
Put it that way. I believe it does.
I don't believe it does. I have to disagree with you there. John Palguta's story number two on the Federal News Countdown is headlined, "Some Federal Workers More Likely to Die Than Lose Jobs." If you haven't seen it yet, you can read it through the link that we have up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we continue, the number one most important federal news story of the week, as chosen by John Palguta, and also the selection from Mark Amtower on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Mike Vaccara at the White House. Terrorism strikes in the heart of Norway. In the capital city of Oslo, a bomb struck the prime minister's office, and on a nearby island, a man opened fire at a youth conference. Here's NBC's Martin Fletcher.
He was dressed up as a police officer. He was asking young people at a youth camp there on the island for their identity papers, and then suddenly opened fire with an automatic weapon.
Norwegian police say at least 7 people were killed and 15 injured in the bomb blast, 5 wounded in the shooting. There is a suspect in custody. Police believe the two attacks are linked. As the debt clock ticks closer, there's still no agreement on cutting the deficit and raising the debt ceiling. House Speaker John Boehner.
There was no agreement, publicly, privately, never an agreement, and frankly, not close to an agreement.
Meanwhile, President Obama says he's willing to sign a deal that would include some tough choices that might not be supported by others in his own party. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Mike Vaccara, NBC News Radio.
If you like painting and saving, ask Sherwin-Williams and save 40% on paints and stains during our 3-day super sale, July 22nd through the 24th. With 40% off our great paints and stains and 30% off painting supplies, you can give your whole home a color makeover. But hurry, these savings are so super, they won't be around for long. Find your nearest store at sherwinwilliams.com/sale. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
My wife's monthly trip to the beauty salon was really adding up. I mean, between dyeing her roots and trimming the dead ends, we were going dead broke. So to save some money, I'm cutting it for her while she sleeps. Shh. No, don't wake up yet. Go to sleep, go to sleep. You're almost gorgeous. Oh, she is going to love this.
There's an easier way to save. Get online. Go to Geico.com. Get a quote. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Secondhand flu vaccinations. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfus with HHS HealthBeat. Babies of mothers who get flu vaccinations seem to pick up protection in the womb. A study found this in data on 1,500 babies younger than 6 months who had been hospitalized for flu-like symptoms in the 2002 to 2009 flu seasons. Those babies are too young for their own vaccination. At Wake Forest University, Kathy Paling says babies were less likely to have the flu if their mothers had been vaccinated while pregnant. so she advises mothers to get vaccinated.
Not only do they personally benefit, but there's additional benefits for their children.
The study in the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology was supported by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Not even former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld can escape the TSA. No, indeed, Rumsfeld was selected for a full pat-down at Chicago's O'Hare Airport. Rumsfeld was reportedly all smiles and very nice throughout the procedure. He was probably gritting under his teeth. Just my guess.
That's the best noise you've ever made on the Federal Drive.
The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday morning, 6 to 10.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected this week by Mark Amtower and John Palguda. And Amtower, your story number one of the week. Oh, I didn't play this. I'm sorry.
Number one!
The most important federal news story of the week, chosen by Mark Amtower from Washington Technology. And the headline is Six Keys and a Caveat to Winning Bigger Contracts. And this kind of stuff becomes more and more important as the market gets tighter and tighter and tighter, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But there was a different headline, forgive me, on the print edition. This is from the web edition.
Okay.
But, you know, everybody's gearing up for IDIQs because those are the contracts that you really leverage end of FY. You get a lot of task order business, et cetera. But, again, I tie it back to the OMB memo of just a week or two back saying we want to get away from the GWAS, we want to get away from the IDIQs, we want firm fixed price. Well, firm fixed price are very difficult vehicles to put out there. The contractor community and to a large extent the government buyers really need the GWAS and the IDIQs to get stuff quickly that they need right now. They cannot go through a lengthy competition firm fixed process.
The whole market is about to change, though, pretty radically, isn't it? Don't you think when we get past the debt limit thing and we get past FY 2011, what's left of it, and start to really look at what the budgets will look like over the next couple of years?
Yeah and no. The contractor community is not going to change. The competition will be more intense, but the competition's been getting more and more intense anyway. And, you know, no, tip number one here, consider M&A to open the doors. You know, we've been seeing this for years. A lot of companies missed out on earlier iterations of SOUP. You know, the trifecta of product IT product contracting was SOUP, ECS, and GSA. If you missed out on one of them, you bought a company to fill in that blank.
Mm-hmm. One of the elements here on this list of six is right up your alley, John, and it's hire the right people. It's just as important for the companies that want to do business with the government as it is for the agencies. And I know your focus is on the agencies, but the same techniques that you work on and that your colleague Tim McManus and I will talk about in the 4 o'clock hour this afternoon apply to people in the private sector too, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's a universal truth, Francis. Any enterprise where we're trying, you're trying to accomplish something, run a business, run a government, what have you. You need technology, you need infrastructure, you need bricks and mortar and all that. But none of that works if you don't have the right people to operate at all. And clearly, you know, private enterprise understands that. And part of our mission at the Partnership for Public Service is to make sure that people outside of government, people on the Hill, And I hope people in government already do realize that that works for government too. You got to have the right people. And we talked about it in your number one or your number two story, Mark, about, you know, at the acquisition workforce. If you want the contracting to work in the public's interest, you got to have the right acquisition folks. So, you know, it ultimately, because I got blinders on as I see the world, it's all about the people. Mm-hmm. You've got to get the right folks into the workforce if you want the right outcomes.
M-Tower story number one is headline, Six Keys and a Caveat to Winning Bigger Contracts from Washington Technology, linked up now at federalnewsradio.com. I guess the subhead here is contractors find IDIQs are low-hanging fruit. That's the print headline, isn't it, Mark?
That's, yeah, something like that. And they are.
The story is for you, is available for you right now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. John Palguda's story number one is next on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Profile America, Friday, July 22nd. Just about every week, there's an old car show somewhere in the country, but Mystic, Connecticut this weekend will host the 36th annual Antique and Classic Boat Rendezvous. The antiques, built no later than 1965, will range from everyday work boats to fancy yachts. Tomorrow, the boats will parade down the Mystic River, most with crews in appropriate costumes, led by the 102-year-old steamboat Sabino. Boating is one of the most popular recreational activities in the nation. We own nearly 17 million boats. The annual cost of maintaining, docking, insuring, and licensing our boats is nearly $31 billion. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview, yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know? The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Attention federal and military agencies. If you've got communications research or other equipment to launch into geosynchronous orbit, Intelsat General offers this wake-up call. With deep spending cuts in place and more on the horizon, it's never been more important to follow the national space policy and work with an experienced commercial-hosted payload partner who can deliver fast, reliable, and cost-effective access to space. Intelsat General is that partner. Learn more at spacedelivered.com. Intelsat General hosted payload program. That's spacedelivered.com.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
We'll be right back.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown is up to story number one as selected by John Palguda. And the headline from the Washington Post in your story number one, John, is federal workers must brace for more bitter medicine, is Joe Davidson's story from the Post. And this is what really I think just about everybody in Washington is talking about. It's his reflection on how the debt limit conversation is affecting people who work for the agencies. We have a similar story on federalnewsradio.com, and some of the other media outlets that follow this have also done some analysis of this, as Joe does here. What's your number one thought as the debt limit discussion continues, as far as how it relates to people who work for the government?
Well, you know, as I was preparing for this afternoon, I knew my number one story had to be related to the debt ceiling. So I was kind of scanning the stories out there. And it did occur to me when I saw this particular piece, it was a kind of a nice summary of something that I actually had a conversation about with some feds this week earlier. That, you know, we had a group of people over at the partnership and having discussion. And the question was, so what's going to be the impact on the federal worker? And the immediate answer, without even thinking about it, was, well, two things. One, we don't know the full impact related to the debt ceiling crisis because we don't know what's going to happen. There's a whole lot of unknowns. This is all new territory. Mm-hmm. But we actually do know something else. There's nothing positive that comes. There's no good news here for federal employees. I'm a big silver lining guy, and I've searched that cloud, that dark cloud, and I can't find a silver lining. There's just a lot of momentum here to do things like find more money by squeezing aspects of the federal workforce. If it's not, well, and it's multiple things. It's decreasing the size. Now, not all of these are going to happen, obviously. And
right.
I would even predict some things a number of these. But some of the stuff's going to happen. We're going to see perhaps a third year of pay freeze, and we haven't had even 2 years in a row. We've had single pay years of pay freeze over the last 40 years. This is the first time in the last 40 years we have 2 years. We're talking about maybe 3 years, at least one proposal. The increased contributions to the defined benefit portion of retirements. The adjustments to COLAs for retirees. I'm a federal retiree, so,
So you're hating that one. You know what really sunk in for me from this piece was the third paragraph. Any final package may include, quote, some adjustments with respect to overall compensation, said Congressman Chris Van Hollen, even as he and others work to, quote, limit any negative impact on federal employees. Now, full disclosure, Chris Van Hollen's my congressman. I don't know him personally. He's been a guest on the show a number of times. When somebody coming from the perspective of advocacy for federal employees that Chris Van Hollen comes from, and he's saying, I'm not trying to read too much into what he's saying, but as he and others work to limit any negative impact, that says to me, I'm Chris Van Hollen. I know that bad things are going to happen if you're a federal employee. And we're going to at least try to make as few of them happen as possible.
I think that's
and there's no shield there, though.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I have a couple mental images as I follow all this stuff. One is, two folks who are engaged in bartering and negotiation. So one says, okay, I'll give you, $20 for this. The other person says, I want $200, and you're hoping that you're going to meet in the middle. But, what we've seen is, the folks saying, I'll give you $20. And the other person said, I'll come down to 180. I'll give you 20. I'll come down to 160. I'll give you 20. But I think there is also the other image is that, just as you said, a recognition that, there's going to be something that we're going to have to take back from what's currently on the plate, and let's try to minimize that. I know there was, a whole lot of folks who were very unhappy, obviously, when the president decided that we would have a 2-year pay freeze for federal employees. But I have to say, as someone who's I'm not a politician, thank goodness, but I kind of try to read the political tea leaves a little bit. you couldn't. There was no hope at all to say, you know, leave federal employees out of it.
Yeah.
Something was going to have to happen. I thought that was a reasonable thing to implement, saying, look, we're making sacrifices across the board.
Well, that, I think you're right, but I kind of came away from the whole pay freeze conversation with the impression that it was done so that later on, federal employee groups, maybe even the administration, could say, well, they already did their sacrifice. They did their part, so we're going to leave them alone from now on. And I think that might be where this sense of betrayal might be too strong a word, but of, hey, wait a minute, what happened? That kind of a moment that a lot of federal employees are having right now.
Well, and I think, you know, what has happened, and I think that might have been part of the thought initially that, okay, we'll do our bit up front here.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll move on to other things. But as the size of the deficit and the tenor of the conversation and what's on the table has continued to play out, and now we've got the debt ceiling being used as leverage. It's like that, you know, that simply wasn't sufficient. We're not going to get a deal without other stuff being on there. And it's just, it's quite unfortunate. We talked just a few minutes ago about the value of the worker and the workplace and the workforce. And this isn't going to help. It's just going to be another management challenge.
That's for sure. John Palguta's story number one is headlined, Federal Workers Must Brace for More Bitter Medicine.